Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there, Colette.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Most people withdrawing from heroin, high on speed, controlled by quaaludes and jet lag, might balk at the idea of food. But not I. I eat not from greed, but from passion.
Do shut up, will you? Not you, someone else.
Would Sir care for a dessert?
Care for it? How do you care for a dessert? Feed it? Visit it on Sundays?
I'll have a creme brulee and a Marc de Bourgogne.
But it's still not heroin, is it? Heroin's the cavalry, the missing chair leg. Heroin is love. Simply call 555-1726.
Shut up!
There you go. That's Benedict Cumberbatch having a rather nice dinner before he goes to buy a boatload of drugs, basically, in Patrick Melrose, which is running on Sundays at 9 p.m. on Sky Atlantic, though you can catch up on demand. James Dempsey joins us once again. Did it leave you... The first episode, I suppose, is establishing things. It's all a bit exhausting as well.
Yes. I was completely unfamiliar with the source material, which is, I think, a series of five novels, each book forming an episode of this kind of miniseries by a writer named Edward St. Aubyn, whose life, I think, is basically the inspiration for it as well. So I knew nothing about it going in except for that I bumped into Sue, who works here and does the TV slot on The Hard Shoulder. And she said, it's brilliant.
Oh, she loved it.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah. So I dipped in because based on her recommendation. And my reaction was much cooler to it. I thought it was fine. I thought it was to me, it seemed like a kind of prestige show that's too big to fail, because you have, you know, this name attached, which I guess if you are in literary circles, you know, because I think one of the novels was nominated for the Booker Prize one of the years. So it's a well-established, kind of well-received piece of literature. Mm. Then you have Benedict Cumberbatch, who is, you know, by now an extremely well-established TV actor to the point of being Oscar-nominated, you know, feature film actor.
Yeah.
And in a prestige drama, along with other famous people like Jennifer Jason Leigh, Hugo Weaving, and many others who you would recognise but maybe not know by name. So it has all of this kind of, it has like this whiff of prestige coming off it. And I can't say, based on the first episode, if I felt it was good enough really to kind of really sort of sink my teeth into. Because, I mean, in fairness, the clip picked out there sells it quite well. It sells it as this very frenetic, kind of interesting, irreverent piece in which you have his subconscious, you know, well, not his subconscious in corporeal form, but just vocally making these asides.
It wasn't clear to me who that was, that he has these kind of interior monologues
yes.
with this other person, and who that's supposed to be.
Because so far it hasn't been established if this is sort of an ongoing thing or just because in the series he learns his father is dead in the first, I mean, in the very first moments of the episode, and he's gone to collect his ashes in New York.
Now that's funny, that
it
first
is funny.
Scene.
Yes,
yeah. Very. He's we're very upset, and then he's just after God, taking heroin didn't help at that moment.
But the rest of it I found somewhat kind of paint by numbers of, you know, posh people take drugs.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is, you've got, you get a lot more backstory in the second episode, which I found far more intriguing, which is all about his growing up or summering in France with his very wealthy mother and his abusive father. But again, it's nothing you haven't seen before in those tropes. You know, you have a drunken mother popping pills and knocking back the glasses. You have a very hyper aggressive father who is very calculating and manipulating. It's nothing I haven't seen before. Now, it is nicely stylized and polished. I mean, the production values have that whiff of prestige as well, because you see, he's in the most gorgeous hotel room you've ever seen. When he's eating the meal there, he's in this like banquet in a fancy New York.
Yeah, and there was the person I was watching with actually identified the hotel that he was in. There's a scene where he's having the old family friend where they're having a drink.
Yes.
That is an actual New York hotel.
Right.
Yeah.
So it is very stylish to look at, and yet also kind of belies some of its trappings as well, because it's set in 1982 and there are some sort of nods to it being a period piece, but not really. I mean, you wouldn't. I think if you missed kind of, you know, London 1982 at the beginning, you'd be hard pressed to notice, except for when you see the New York skyline.
And nobody has a mobile phone. That's about the only thing. Yeah.
That's about it. Mm. So I'm going to go the distance with it, but so far I'm not all in on, you know, they've given me a taste, but they haven't hooked me yet in the pushing of Patrick Melrose onto me. It's very well acted, but I guess I just don't find it yet interesting enough to escape what I see as sort of prestige and no more than that.
Yeah. I watched the first one and I found it very funny in parts. And at time, and even that clip I thought was an example of that, the script isn't as clever as it thinks it is and isn't as funny as it thinks it is.
Which is surprising, because the script is actually written by David Nichols, a very famous novelist who's a very funny novelist as well.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's bad.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's cashing comedy checks its balance quite can't pay for, really, is how I would describe it. And I've used that line many times.
Yes. Or paraphrase that line very many times, yes. hopefully it has. I think Cumberbatch is very good.
He is a very engaging heroin addict. He's even just interesting to look at, because he's not in any way classically handsome. He's not in any way ugly. He's just Britain. He's just got this very British upper class look about him that he carries and wears very well. And he throws himself all in at this. There's no denying that. I think Hugo Weaving, who plays his abusive father, and Jennifer Jason Leigh, who's his pill-popping mother, pulled themselves off admirably. The second episode, I thought, was a great bottle episode in the sense of, you know, it's self-contained, mostly set in this kind of villa in the south of France where they are influencing his life, and you're sort of beginning to see the foundations of how he will end up in this life of addiction to sort of cover the pains and wounds he's endured over time. And it's this...
Well, actually, because... That in the first episode, that's what you kind of infer from this. And that's kind of paper thin psychology, really. Oh my God, he had a horrible upbringing, so he became a smack addict. You know, that doesn't necessarily follow at all.
So the second episode is it's a self-contained story of kind of their summer there and a visit of either a relative or a family friend. My focus was a bit torn. And how they came for dinner. And it's a bit like, in some ways, kind of like an Abigail's Party style, you know, except very much an upper class version of that, where it's seething arguments at the dinner table in full sight in front of everyone, where everyone knows what's going on and no one's talking about it. I enjoyed that more. I thought it was a more polished episode in the sense of telling the story. But again, it's nothing I haven't seen before.
Yeah, well... Still though, like you, I think I'm going to stick with it, I must say. Right, a couple of bits of TV news. A.B. Huberman is to write and star in a new comic drama for RTE. In what way is that news, James?
I was thinking, she must have been like, you know what, Saoirse Ronan, I'm taking the record for if this is here. Yeah. She wants to win in both comic and dramatic categories. So Amy Huberman is obviously the darling of RTE already, with, you know, striking out as its big glossy legal drama. And now they've commissioned this 6-part series from her called Finding Joy, in which she plays Joy, who is a 34-year-old woman who goes through a painful breakup and is now trying to find happiness in...
I'm sorry, but like, so she's just not a lawyer in this one, is what you're telling us.
She tries to find joy in various other places. And if that hasn't sold you, it also co-stars Laura Whitmore and Aisling Bea. And Aisling Bea also announced today her own sitcom commission from Channel 4. So she's going to make a new 6-part series called Happy AF, in which she plays a woman who I think is called Anya, who is overcoming a nervous breakdown. And it's being made by Sharon Horgan's production company, Merman Productions. Yeah. And Sharon Horgan is also on board to co-star as well as her sister in the piece.
Right. Okay. Well, that should be very interesting. Laura Whitmore has, of course, she did do a stage show. I think she used to work here many moons ago before she went off to MTV and
became a star.
actually got a job that paid properly. a new anthology series for Netflix. Again, a prestige one, as you'd say.
Definitely, because it comes from, well, my Spanish isn't great, but Guillermo del Toro of The Shape of Water fame, having just won the Oscar for Best Director and Best Film. He has signed on with Netflix to produce this horror anthology series, which sounds essentially like Black Mirror, except with spookiness.
Mm, yeah.
And it's called 10 After Midnight, and it is going to be, you know, very much cut from that Charlie Brooker Black Mirror style cloth, where Guillermo del Toro will write and direct a certain number of the episodes, and then guest directors will be brought in for the rest of them. And I guess it's going to be pretty much exactly like Black Mirror, but yeah, scary, because he credits an anthology that I had never heard of, which is called Night Gallery, which ran from 1969 to 1974, as sort of a major influence on him and his career, that he watched this as a child in Mexico, and one of the episodes He said, to quote him, it scared him so much he peed like a hose.
Yes.
While watching it. So it is very much, he, you know, Del Toro is a well-established horror director even before he made these,
yeah,
word of the day, his prestige dramas, going for Oscars, and it's his bag, this kind of horror, okay, scary thing.
All right, so make sure you go to the toilet before you watch one of these. Right, we have to take a break. Two more shows to talk about after this.
I was assigned to the patrol unit here in Erie, and on that particular day I was riding my motorcycle. I was made aware of a situation going on over on Peach Street.
Police captured Brian Wells, age 46, a pizza delivery man, just minutes after he left the bank.
We got him out of the car and handcuffed him. And Brian had said something about a bomb. It was Trooper Zemanski who went up and actually, using a small pair of scissors, cut the size of the shirt. And when Trooper Zemanski lifted the shirt, he looked at it and he goes, yeah, that looks like a bomb to me. That's when they sat him down to isolate him.
That's Evil Genius, the true story of America's most diabolical bank heist, as we said already, all those streaming on Netflix. So, Jane, this is a documentary, obviously, yeah. James.
So there's a four-part documentary series, and it's the second one in, I think, as many months as well, to come out from the Duplass Brothers production house. And the Duplass Brothers are these well-known American kind of movie auteurs. One of them is in Transparent as the Sun in that, but they have produced two kind of very intriguing documentaries for Netflix this year. One is Wild Wild Country, and this is the other one, Evil Genius. And I sort of defy anyone to not watch the first episode of this and be compelled to just let it all wash over you, because just the story itself is so bonkers and strange that it is compelling and of itself. So it is a true story of this bank heist in 2003 in the town named Erie, Pennsylvania, where a man walked into the bank, handed a note over to the teller, and the note said, I am wearing a bomb. I have been forced to take part in this. Please give me €250,000 or dollars. And he is given some money and he heads out, and the police are there to apprehend him. Yeah. And this man, whose name is Brian Wells, is sort of pleading to the police to help him and help him. And the bomb goes off and he dies. And I would warn anyone watching that you are shown this bomb going off. I mean, it took me completely out of nowhere surprise, because I was not expecting this at all. And if you are, you know, squeamish or in any way put off by that kind of thing, it's probably better off to know in advance. And this is very early on in the episode. And it goes on to follow the case and how this pizza delivery man had a bomb strapped on him, along with sort of a treasure hunt style list in order to find the keys in order to remove this bomb from around his neck and save himself. And that is just so odd and strange in and of itself. And then you sort of begin to see a cast of characters who may or may not have been involved in it as well, which includes, at the end of the first episode, a man making a police phone call saying, yeah, there's a frozen body in my freezer. You need to come and arrest my girlfriend. So it is just so such an odd, unbelievable, almost incredible story that, like, if you were to write it down, people would think it is, you know, fiction. Mm. And it is really, like, you know, stranger than fiction stuff, this. It follows a lot of the trappings of true crime, which is just the documentary, you know, genre du jour that we cannot get out of. But there is just something so intriguing about this kind of human interest storytelling, where you have a really madcap scheme that has ended up with this innocent man losing his life. What was his role in it? What is their role in it? Who's responsible? Why on earth would they concoct this incredibly elaborate scheme, you know, to rob a bank when presumably it was easier to go in carrying a gun?
Yeah.
It's just all so intriguing. And it's very nicely put together in just four episodes, which are, you know, between 45 minutes to an hour long. So it's easy to consume without it taking all of your time. It's nicely polished and well put together. And it really is, it's an excellent companion piece to the aforementioned documentary, Wild, Wild Country, which I have not finished, but is also a very intriguing story, which follows the same kind of pattern in that it is about, both of the pieces are about women. These two women at the centre who are maniacal in their plotting and deviousness. Mm. And really, I highly recommend both.
Yeah. What's the style of it? Is there a lot of talking heads? How do they carry the story along?
It's talking heads. It's a lot of interviews with the surviving people involved. There's many interviews with police, lots of archived footage. I think we're actually kind of living in... It probably goes to explain why true crime documentaries are so prevalent right now, particularly from the last, we'll say, 30 years, because of this prevalence of video files that no longer need to be stored in, you know, cassette form, that they can be stored on memory sticks or digital files or anywhere. And we just have this glut of material out there around which to shape a documentary. Some talking heads, some narration. It's a fairly straightforward documentary in the true crime style.
But no need for reconstructions, which I always find annoying for some
one,
reason.
As from what I recall, one reconstruction, a really pointless one in which they say, and the letters were contained in a file called Letters from Prison or something, and they they just see this file with Letters from Prison reappearing on the screen, which doesn't really add much to the story.
No, not really, but yeah,
give someone a job.
To put some pictures in there. Right, our third show today is Daniel and Magella's B&B Road Trip. That's on Tuesdays at 8:30 p.m. on RT1. And you can catch up, of course, on the online player. Here's a clip.
We follow Mary to her room, and as a golf lover, I'm in paradise.
Oh, the Tom Watson suite.
The best for the best.
Oh, my goodness, look at the fire and everything.
We will see you downstairs soon.
No problem.
Okay.
Thank you, Mary.
We'll see you soon.
Oh, look at the chocolates and strawberries. Mm. Oh, you don't take all the chocolate. God, bring you.
I thought Denim was much slimmer in reality.
They're both just shares, Romanti, if you share.
I'm sorry. Here, don't buy it.
This is the Tom Watson suite, my dear. Tom Watson slept in that bed. Hello, Tom Watson.
That's a... The thing is, like, I even when you hear that clip, you start smiling, and it's not naff. It's knowing that and Daniel and Magella are just a brilliant double act.
They are a brilliant double act. I just cannot explain the kind of alchemy that makes this so charming.
Mm.
But it is just really, really charming. I actually pay full credit to the producers of the show, because I think they have really understood how to take. There was, what is to people not from Ireland an astonishingly weird concept, a kind of popular country and western crooner and his wife driving around staying in B&Bs for a night.
Without any
rating or anything, you know.
The producer of this, the person whose idea this was a fellow called Philip Kampf, whom I know. And at first he did get that kind of, that's a bit mad, because people didn't know the kind of, you know, what they come up with.
But I think they have edited it in such a way that it is clearly inviting to everyone, be they Daniel and Magella fans. And I think they're kind of, you have to think of them now as a pair rather than as rather than just Daniel, really. And also people who are kind of looking for the naff qualities of it, because they play up to those as well. I mean, it's so funny. It's like, so you have the B&B proprietors and you think, you know, you might think when you're sitting down there's going to be a bit of a drag, but you have the B&B people and they are so enamoured with the visits of particularly Daniel, but Daniel and Magella. And they're they are so heartfelt in their praise and an excitement for it, that it's really just cute, really, really cute TV, and I really enjoy it. I mean, I find it like... it doesn't really go anywhere, you know.
They
stay the night, they have the breakfast, they leave.
Mm.
Everything is complimented, everything is wonderful, everything is nice. I mean, the closest you get to a bit of tension is maybe a bit of scrapping over like a wrong turn on the road. But even that, I'm not sure, is not thrown in.
Yes,
in post production planning. But I just like it's a half an hour long. There's no malice or meanness to it. It's just really cute, nice, warm Irishness. It's sort of Irishness packaged on TV.
And you know that, like, because over the years, every now and again, you come in with a review of a programme, and RT, in the main, obviously, it's up to them to try this to kind of reflect the real Ireland. And it's difficult to do because you're doing it from a Dublin-centric point of view. This probably does it as well, if not better, than most attempts at this.
I would say so. I mean, so in the opening episode there, we saw Ballybunion and Glen Bay in County Kerry, and you know, you got a real sense of, I guess, what it's like to run a business down there, what kind of things you need to do in order to make it successful and to appeal to an audience or to guests and keep yourself occupied all season long. But then you also get to see Daniel O'Donnell doing disco spinning on a yes. on a bike and being dragged by his landlady for the evening, saying that she thought he'd be slimmer. It just is really strange, but I really, really enjoy it.
Yeah, and it's not. There's nothing mean about it.
No,
well
there's
either,
nothing mean about
it. Actually, what's lovely about it.
And there's no even archness to it. Mm. Like, it's not like you're meant to be laughing at this. It's all like, just laugh along with this.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's Daniel and Magella's B&B road trip. Though I would look forward to Daniel O'Donnell doing a guest appearance on Patrick Melrose. That would be a head-melting combination. James Dempsey, thanks a million. We'll take a break. Back.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. Gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Back in a couple of minutes.